Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. I'm Ryan Dobson, and today we're going to continue our conversation with Dave Ramsey and his daughter Rachel Cruz about their new book titled Smart Money, Smart Kids. That book is now available, and I'll share with you how you can pick up a copy at the end of the program. Now, Dave and Rachel, let's pick up on our conversation from last time. We were talking about saving. Rachel, how can parents teach their kids the value and importance of saving? And what are some of the different stages and ages that you can teach kids as they get older about saving?
Sure. Well, when it comes to parents, I mean, a very tactical way of doing it is mom and dad made us save part of the money we earned when we worked. And so, but we always had a goal we were working towards. And so when you have little kids, you know, that goal could be a Barbie or a Lego set. I had a lady tweet me a picture of her little girl holding up the movie Frozen, and she had saved up, you know, to pay for Frozen when it came out. So find little things that your kids can save up and pay for. And as they get older, obviously things are going to change because the older your kids are, the more expensive they become. So sure, there's going to be things like car and college and those kind of discussions. And so, yeah, so in a tactical sense, I mean, we had to save money, that we had to save some of the money we earned. But what that teaches, just like what Dad was saying, is it teaches patience. It teaches wisdom. It teaches delayed gratification. And so all that is so important, and especially this generation coming up, because they are so instant. I mean, thanks to, you know, the iPhone, you can have anything you want, any kind of information, talk to anyone on the planet with a touch of a button, literally, or touch of this phone screen, I should say. And so that's the world they're growing up in. And so that really affects them in their purchasing decisions, because they look at a jacket in the mall and think, well, I can't pay for it, but that's okay. I want it right now, so I'm going to do it. And so they swipe a credit card. Mm. And so teaching them to delay that pleasure and save up and pay for things, that's going to help them so much more in the long run.
Sure. And it helps with the impulse buy, because after they're saving for a while, maybe that jacket wasn't really that great. Maybe it wasn't that important to get the jacket. Now that I've saved up $150, $200, I'm not quite sure I want to spend it on a jacket.
Yeah, cash looks really nice when you're seeing it in your bank account, and you think twice before spending that money, for sure.
Sure. Dave, talk about this, because it's important that parents still are involved in their child's purchases, and you never allowed the phrase, it's my money, I can buy whatever I want in your house.
Yeah, I was an old school, and I still am an old school dad, and you know, that means if you're under 18 years old, or for that matter, if you live under my roof, then it's my rules, period. And I'm a benevolent dictator. I love you. I'll do anything in the world for you. I serve you. Mm-hmm. And so all of these actions are for your good, because I'm a loving dad, a loving father. But you don't own anything when you're a child from a legal perspective. And really, from a moral or spiritual perspective, what that says is, I'm in control, Dad. You're not in control.
Yeah.
And so I can have this piercing. I can wear this type of clothing. I can dress in this inappropriate way that doesn't fit with our household because I have a job at the mall. Mm-hmm. And so the answer is no. I'm still the dad. I'm still in control. And as Bill Cosby said, I can take you out and make another one look just like you.
That's right.
Yeah, but it's just, you know, we're going to behave in such a way, independent of this money discussion, that we as parents allow. The money thing is not so that you get control of your life at 13 years old and make decisions outside of our family boundaries and values. The money is all about a teachable moment.
Yeah.
And the same thing's true with your car. You save up and pay half of your car. It's in my name, though.
Right.
I own the car. And if there's a question about whether the car is going to leave the driveway, I win the question.
That's right. Oh, yeah. That's how my parents, there's a camp here in Colorado called Summit, and it's on teaching kids the Christian worldview. And that was exactly how I got to Summit. They asked me at 16 if I'd go, and they described it as summer school, but you'll like it, which did not make any sense to me whatsoever.
And it's kind of oxymoron.
Oh, yeah. I flat turned them down at 16. At 17, my dad came back, and I've told the story a bunch of times. He said, you know that car you drive? And I said, yeah. He goes, if you go to camp, it'll still be here when you get back. And I said, well, what if I don't go to camp? And he goes, I sell it today. Mm. So I went to camp, and he was right. It changed my life. I dedicated my first book to Dr. David Noble, who was teaching at the camp. I teach there all summer long because it made such a huge impact on my life. They made that right decision for me. And another one of those decisions, Dave, talks about giving, you know, whether it be to tithe or to charities or to other ministries. Why is giving so important, and why is giving so important to teach to your kids?
When you're giving, you're most like Christ. you're most godlike. Mm. Because the Bible says you and I are made in God's image, and he gave his only son.
Oh, wow.
And so giving is in your spiritual DNA. And when you're not giving, you're breaking down parts of who you are in a bad way. And here's the thing. When you set someone up, when you teach a child to be givers, you're teaching them to be grateful. You're teaching them to win. You're teaching them to be highly attractive. You know, generous people aren't just generous with their money. But many times the way you teach someone and you grow their generous muscle is with money. But generous people are the ones that open a door for you when you got your six bags of groceries in your hand.
That's right.
You know, generous are the ones that run out to the car and with an umbrella and bring somebody into the office that they don't even know. Generous people are those kinds of people. And you know what? They're highly attractive people. And that's what I want my children to be.
Oh, that's true. And I had that someone, a girl I was dating in college, made that comment because I normally overtip. I've worked in restaurants so many times, and it's been some of the greatest learning experiences at some of the worst jobs I've ever had. And I know, you know, you have a bad day and someone doesn't tip you because you have a bad day and you're grumpy. And you think, oh, my goodness, you know, you have no idea what's going on in my life and at home. And I've always carried that over. I don't know what's going on in your life. I don't know if you're a single mom or a single dad and you've got kids at home that are sick and you're fighting a cold yourself. And, you know, unless you're just outright hostile towards me, I'll probably over tip. And I had a girl in college say, I've never seen someone tip like that. And I said, well, you don't, you know, these jobs are rough, you know, washing dishes. And, you know, I'd see kids that would, you know, put change in their drink at the end of the night as their tip. And I just thought it was so disrespectful to people that were working so hard. And it just makes you unattractive. It just, Zappos, the shoe company, the online shoe company, they talk about how they'll take prospective employees that they're interviewing out to lunch and see how they treat wait staff. And if they're dismissive and rude, they say, we don't hire you because you're treating people poorly and we don't want you to treat people in our office poorly.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, I think we need to overtip because so many Christians undertip.
I know.
And you and I need to make up for them.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, I worked in a couple restaurants and Sunday afternoons were rough. And,
yeah.
And you talk about it in the morning. And here's the thing, too. It's not all Christians. I don't even know if it's the majority of Christians.
No, it's just the cheap ones.
Yeah, it's happened enough, though, that it's now in our culture that, you know, the Sunday afternoon Christians tip so poorly that you don't want them to be at your table.
Well, you don't even want to work that shift.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. Rachel, how'd your dad teach you the value of giving?
Well, I think when it comes to parents and just teaching your kids about money in general, there's a principle that I talk about in the book called, they're just saying that more is caught than taught. And so your kids are watching you. And so this portion of money, the giving aspect, is even more important because, I mean, I have memories of sitting on a church pew in my sister's hand-me-down dress, and that red velvet offering bag would pass through our row Sunday after Sunday.
Oh, yeah.
And every single Sunday, I would watch Dad put in a folded check, and he'd drop it in that offering bag, and he'd drop it in week after week. And that just memory has been instilled in my mind. I mean, I can look back and remember that. And so for parents, you can't tell your kids to give if you're not giving. And so your kids are going to be watching you. And again, part of us, we were, you know, forced to give part of the money we worked for. And at first it became that tactical in the sense of, yes, you put it in this envelope, and you take that envelope to church. But over a period of time, I mean, even as young as 6 or 7 years old, I mean, I felt my heart change because I worked hard. I fed the dog every day that week or whatever it was. And I gave part of that money in the offering bag. And so letting your kids experience that, again, I think it changes their hearts.
It does. Our church had alabaster boxes, and they would preach on it, and all the little kids, we'd get an alabaster box, and you'd put your change in it until it was full and bring it back. And I remember how exciting it was to bring it back to the church because the church had made it a big deal. You know, and all the kids would come up on a Sunday after we had filled our little alabaster boxes to give to the church. And I mean, I'm 44 years old. I still remember that. I still remember that, you know, the little tiny white box that we would fill up with change and bring it back. And it was important. To both of you, how do you know who to give to? Obviously, we give to the church because that's where we go and we want to support the church. But how do you help your kids know that this is a good person or a good organization to give to?
I learned from some very wealthy people that I was able to spend time with that give hundreds of millions of dollars away. And I learned it late, but one of my favorite principles on this is to treat giving as if you're investing. because you are.
Yeah.
You're supposed to be managing God's money for His glory. And so I don't put God's money in a bad investment. How do I do that? Well, I check the investment out. I see how efficiently it's being run. I look at its potential future. Is it a good investment? That's, mm-hmm. Is it safe and is it growing and does it have a good looking future? That's a great investment. Well, guess what? It's the same thing when you're giving. Is that ministry safe? Is it well run? Is it efficient? Is it growing? And what does its future look like? Well, that's a good investment of God's money. By the way, the same thing with people. When we all look around, we like helping people who we think it's going to move the needle and they're going to move forward. No one enjoys the idea of giving to a person who is going to need more help 3 months from now because they're not going to do anything about their situation.
Sure.
And they're not getting help that they need in a particular area of their life that they're struggling. And so we often, with individuals, will require that people engage in things that are going to bring healing to their life as a part of the giving plan, because then that's a good heavenly investment.
Yeah. Dave, let's talk a little bit about budgeting. I know when we took Financial Peace University, that was the thing that we struggled with the most. And it's embarrassing that at this age, when we worked out how much all of our bills were and how much I made, no wonder we were in debt, because we were spending more than we were making. And I know parents are listening going, I don't even have a handle on my own budget. How can I teach my kids this? But what do you say to that person?
Well, the thing we want to remember about budgeting is it's not rocket science.
Mm.
It's just a plan. That's all it is. You're just going to tell your money what to do, as John Maxwell says, rather than wondering where it went. And Zig Ziglar used to say, if you aim at nothing, you'll hit it every time. So all we're doing is we're just being intentional with our money.
Sure.
We're just going to make the money behave by telling it what to do before it leaves. And that's what we as adults do, and we can do the same thing with our children. In other words, look forward and don't live in only the moment, because living only in the moment is living in the land of impulse. And the Bible says, he who is impulsive exalts folly. And folly is the verb of a fool in action. So he who is impulsive is a fool in action.
Mm-hmm.
And that's whether we're adults or, whether we're 14. And so we've got a guide, and we want to have fun with money. We want to enjoy it. We want to give it. We want to save it. We want to have all the aspects of money, and that's a good biblical balance. But you only can do that if you're intentional about it.
Sure. Rachel, how'd your dad teach you this? Did you actually have a budget you wrote down from the time you were young?
Well, when we were, 6 through probably 14 years old, we had 3 envelopes that we had every week called Give, Save, and Spend on the front of them.
Oh, yeah.
So whenever we made money through, in the house or whatnot, we had to divide up our money into giving, saving, and spending. And that's really the basics of budgeting for little kids. I mean, you're not going to go to extreme measures to teach them budgeting when they're that young. And so as I got older, though, they showed us how to do a zero-based budget. You take your income minus your expenses should equal zero. And Mom and Dad, when we were teenagers, would take the amount of money they would normally spend on us and put it into a bank account. And so we had that money throughout the month, and we had to budget it. And we had to say, okay, I have this amount for cheerleading fees. I have this amount for gas for my car. And if we wanted more money than what was in our account, AKA we went to work. Obviously, we went and got a job. And I remember not budgeting, because I was not a very detailed person. Still, I'm not super detailed. And so I was kind of the rebel and would never really budget and kind of just swipe my debit card and wrote checks throughout that account. And one month I ended up bouncing 3 checks.
Ooh.
Yeah, not good being Dave Ramsey's daughter and bouncing 3 checks. Not what you want.
It's a lot of pressure.
That is. So I actually had to go to the bank and apologize to the bank manager for lying to him. Yep. Thank you, Dad, for that. Counseling has walked me through that memory, though.
You're not doing that again, though.
Just kidding.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So I learned that I have to budget, or I'm going to spend, money. If I'm not in control, I'm going to spend more than what I have. So, So, again, you can do it on a yellow pad. It doesn't have to be confusing.
Yeah, that's right. The envelope system is so great. I have friends that own an Army surplus store, and I'm there all the time, and we hunt together and stuff, and I was in there talking one time, and a woman came to buy some things, and she opened her purse when she went to pay for it, and she pulled out some envelopes, and she was looking for the right one and pulled money out, and I just leaned over, and I go, Dave Ramsey? And she immediately turned around and her face lit up and she goes, yes, how did you know? And I said, you've got the envelope system. And she's like, oh, it has totally revolutionized my life. And I'm like, absolutely. And it was just such a neat thing to see out in the open, someone doing that and it working so well. That leads us to debt. Dave, we live in a debt-based society. I mean, we really do. Right now, our government's trillions and trillions of dollars in debt. We're still giving aid money all over the world. We're giving people money when we're in such debt. And you encourage parents to teach your kids to never use debt. Why is that?
Well, when Sharon and I went broke several years ago, I had to go back and revisit all of my cultural and academic understanding of money. I mean, I've got a degree in finance. I have all these letters and licenses after my name that says I'm supposed to know something about money, but there I sat broke. So obviously I missed something.
Yeah.
And, you know, my pastor says, don't let the world teach you theology. As a Christian, then, broke and broken with the I surrender flag up, I had to look at the Bible and say, okay, God, this is your money. You have a plan for me. You love me, even when I'm stupid. How do you want your money handled? So yeah. I started studying, you know, everything Ron Blue wrote or Larry Burkett wrote or Howard Dayton wrote and learning anything I could get my hands on about what the Bible has to say about money. Oh, and by the way, study the Bible too. And now 25 years later, I've still been looking through the Bible and one of the premier voices in America on this subject, and I've yet to be able to find one single mention of debt in the Bible that is positive. It's not a sin. It's not in there. It's not a salvation issue for sure. Mm-hmm. But every single mention of debt is negative. God never used debt one single time in the Bible positively. It's a curse. You're a fool. You're a slave. Yeah. Every time you're around debt, the Bible has bad things to say. And so, you know, biblically speaking, debt is stupid. You know, if that's the case, then and my loving Heavenly Father, who's crazy about me, tells me that with his love letter to me, why wouldn't I pass the message on to my kids?
Yeah, that's super, super important. Rachel, talk about this. Did you ever doubt your parents and your dad's stance on debt? Did you ever look at it and go, you know, I really don't know if he really knows what he's talking about in this area?
No, honestly, I didn't. But the encouraging part and what I want to tell parents is, you know, because my parents made me work, they made me save up for things, everything from, you know, a car at 16 to even clothes I wanted, whatever it was, they taught us to work and save up. And so as an adult, I'm like, I don't feel like I need a credit card because I have a checking account and my debit card. And if I don't have the money in there, I'm not going to go buy it.
And I have a plan.
And there's a plan in place. I mean, I saved up and paid for half of a car at 16 years old, so I can save up and pay for a car as an adult. I mean, I walked through that process. And so I guess there was just never a point where I thought I need debt because I don't.
Yeah, that's right. I remember my first day at college, I did sign up for a credit card. I couldn't believe it. They were just going to give me a credit card.
Yes.
I think I had a $1,000 limit. And I was like, oh my goodness, they're just going to give me $1,000. Well, that was my first day of college. I promise you, it took me 10 years to pay off that credit card. You know, they kept upping my limit and I kept spending it. And then one day I woke up in serious debt and just thought, oh my goodness, this is terrible. It took me a long time. And I moved to a total cash system that I actually had people comment on. They're like, why don't you use a card? I'm like, because I don't want to go into any more debt.
Yes.
You know, they had never seen someone that just carried cash. Everybody carried cards with them. And it's tough. It's tough to get out of that debt. And talk about that, Rachel, because you're passionate about that those college years, because it can be devastating on adults when they saddle themselves with debt at such an early age.
Yes. Well, college especially, I mean, just the cost of college, it is on the rise, but people are losing their minds even more with the subject. So again, student loan debt has surpassed credit card debt in America. Now it's up to $1 trillion that's owed in student loans. Ugh. And this is probably the biggest myth that my generation has believed, is that you can't be a student without a student loan. And so people just assume, well, you're going to take out a loan for college, so just go wherever you want. It doesn't matter if it's out of state. It doesn't matter if it's a private college. Just go, because you're going to have to take out debt anyways. And that's so the mindset of our country. And it's completely insane, because I'm the one talking to these students, you know, a month before graduation, and they're $90,000 in debt, or they're $30,000 in debt. And they're like, well, you know, I had one one guy tell me at a private school up north, and he talked to me after one of my talks, and he said, "Hey, I have $90,000 in debt. I'm engaged to be married to a girl who took out $90,000 in debt as well. So they're $180,000 in debt." And then he looks at me and he was like, "And Rachel, we just really feel called to the mission field. That's just where we want to, what we want to do, what we feel like God's calling us to do. So how can we make that possible?" And I had to look at this, you know, 21-year-old guy in the eyes, and I just told him, I was like, "It's going to be really difficult to go be a missionary, because I know you don't mind the small salary and you don't mind living on nothing to go and move to South America. And I think that's great. But mathematically speaking, you can't go do that. Like, you have to go get a job and pay this $180,000. That's just the principal. That's not even the interest."
Oh, my goodness.
And so that's what I'm looking in the faces of all these college students. So I just, you know, I think student loans have become the roadblock to this generation.
You know, Jesus said it's tough to serve two masters.
Yeah, that's right.
And the borrower is slave to the lender. And that's what you've got there. You've got a young man and woman who really do have probably the Holy Spirit speaking to them about what they're supposed to do. But they've gotten themselves so bound up with another master that they're having to choose something other than God's will. Because of the other choices that they made, and because really, honestly, their parents didn't guide them well. That's poor parenting to allow your child to do that.
Oh, definitely. And the number one cause of divorce is financial problems in a marriage. I mean, you look at that couple, $180,000, that's just the starting debt that they incurred.
Right. Exactly.
You know, it's just going to cause such a huge strain on their marriage. And as much as we're a culture that fosters debt, we also have a culture that breeds and fosters discontent. And Dave, you call this the war for your child's heart. What's the secret to teaching contentment to your kids?
This is Rachel and my favorite chapter in the book. It's getting more reaction than anything else we've done. The other stuff is very tactical, and everybody kind of goes common sense. But this idea that we can teach our children contentment, and the Bible says godliness with contentment is great gain. This idea that we can actually teach that as a part of our parenting strategy is really exciting to people. And I'm glad because I've seen it happen with our kids. I've seen it as God, you know, reparented me after, you know, growing up basically materialistic, and he reset my mind. And I'm not against stuff, and I don't want your kids to be against stuff. Stuff's not evil.
Yeah.
But this materialism, which literally is the worship of stuff.
Yeah.
You know, it is just rampant. It's the biggest idol of the age.
It is.
And if
it
we
is.
Can break that idol down in our house, if we can tear down the high places, you know, for in our children's spirit, in our household, and they see that those high places are not where you go to worship, then, man, well, you can lead them into contentment. You have given them a better gift than everything else we've talked about this hour.
Wow. Rachel, how did you learn contentment? Did you struggle with that growing up?
Well, sure. I mean, I think every probably teenager in America, you're discontent, you know, different things. You know, you're not going on the trip you wanted to go on, and all your friends are going there, but we're not going to be able to go there. You know, I mean, all those conversations for sure happened in our house, but it's such a heart issue. And so I think that's what's hard about parents and having to teach your kids that, because it's so emotional. But what we've figured out about contentment is to be content, first, you have to be grateful. And you have to be thankful for, A, what you have, where you are in life. And out of gratitude, I think that's the giving portion. I mean, as you're giving, I believe you become more grateful. But you can't be grateful first without being humble. And humility is something that parents, you have to be talking to your kids about. You have got to be humble, because the opposite of humility, I believe, is arrogance.
Yeah.
And arrogance is where your entitlement comes from, that I deserve this should be mine. It's just a sense of arrogance. And so what you're doing with just the simple fact of contentment and teaching your kids to be content is all these other heart issues as well line up. And so obviously it takes, you know, kids to be a little bit more mature, and the older they get, maybe it's the more difficult, but yet at the same time they can grasp it more. And so just be having conversations, again, simple things like stuff is not going to make you happy. And your kids may believe that, and maybe they will go purchase something thinking it'll make them happy. And they realize, okay, no, it really doesn't. And I tell teenagers all the time, I'm like, if you think stuff is going to fulfill your happiness, you are going to be a rat in a wheel for the rest of your life.
Whoa.
You're going to be going around and around and around and around. You're never going to have traction. And so you kind of have to just break that myth. And again, like Dad said, stuff is not bad. But when stuff becomes your identity, that's where you get in trouble.
Sure. It's the concept of money doesn't make you wealthy.
Yes.
Wow. Oh, my goodness. thank you all so much for being here. This has been such a great program. And I really, again, I encourage our listeners, pick up this book, Smart Money, Smart Kids. Put your kids on the track to success, to contentment, to being gracious and thankful for what they have. Dave and Rachel, my goodness, you have done such an amazing job. The two of you are helping millions of people find that contentment. I can't tell you how much I appreciate you being here today.
Ryan, thank you for having us. It's our honor to be with you.
Yeah, thank you, Ryan.
God bless you both. I appreciate it. And if you'd like more information about Dave Ramsey and Rachel Cruz, or to pick up a copy of their book, Smart Money, Smart Kids, you can visit our website, drjamesdobson.org, or call us at 877-732-6825. Thanks for joining us today, and we'll see you again next time for another edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
Family Talk is not affiliated with Focus on the Family.